There have been a plethora of amazingly talented people who spent time on this earth throughout history. I enjoy reading, listening, watching, and learning about those beautiful works that they have left behind. I was born in 1982, so the 1990s were my formative years. 90s country music takes me back to a time and place when the world was very much a wide open landscape that I had not yet explored. From songs of hurt to songs of joy, the music from that time kept a steady balance of both. So many of those songs actually taught me life lessons, even though I was unaware most of the time what they were even talking about. The solo artists of that era get most of the credit and the glory historically. The quote-unquote bands were amazing too. From Black Hawk to the Pirates of the Mississippi to Diamond Rio to the Mavericks, there are literally dozens of great bands from that era of country music. Sawyer Brown is probably one of the top 10 of the 1990s. Billboard Music Charts ranked Sawyer Brown 21st of all musical acts that charted during the 1990s. The band had 21 top 40 hits between 1990 and 1999. 13 of those songs were top 10 hits. A song that still strikes a chord with me today is called The Dirt Road. The song reached the number 3 spot on the charts in late 1991. It was perfect timing for me because I spent my first 7 or 8 years living on a dirt road just down the way from my grandparents' house and cousins who were my closest friends and family during that time period of my life. The memories from that time period are precious and still fresh as the cut hay on a hot summer day here in rural Alabama. From my papaw's yellow 1978 Ford pickup truck to my dad's coon hounds to my granny making me homemade chocolate pudding on a hot summer day. Every time I hear Sawyer Brown's The Dirt Road, it takes me right back there. You know, certain songs and musical artists have a way of teaching life lessons. One song that I recently revisited is The Dirt Road by Sawyer Brown. Just take the opening lines, for example. Daddy worked hard for his dollar. He said some folks don't, but that's okay. They won't know which road to follow, because an easy street might lead you astray. My papaw and my dad are the two hardest working men I've ever known. And I never heard them make excuses or not give it their all due to someone else's poor work ethic or bad behavior. I've tried to carry those same values and work ethic into my everyday life as well. I walked that dirt road, or rode my bike, up and down it in many, many days of my youth. I still try to quote, "Take my time, so life won't pass you by," as much as I can. When it's said and done, the time we have is borrowed. So you better make real sure you're headed the right way. I mean, how profound are those lyrics? They really make great life quotes. even when taken out of context of the musical world. Great music should make you think about your life and reflect on your life experiences. Sawyer Brown's music did that more often than not. Just a side note here, I had no idea that the great banjo player Earl Scruggs played on the dirt road. The American Dream. Do you really want it? Do you really need it? You gotta keep on grinding just to try to keep it. You got no time for yourself and more for old Jim Beam. You're going crazy dreaming the American Dream. This classic Hank Williams Jr. song is a perfect example of the simple but genius that songwriting can be, specifically country songwriting. In less than 2.5 minutes, Hank speaks on failed, injured, sports stars, crooked preachers, not only taking their followers' money via television donations, but doing so, quote-unquote, tax-free. Hank also touches on Reaganomics in the second verse, all while keeping a head-bobbing, foot-stomping backbeat. This era of Hank's music was my favorite by far. I'm not sure why, but The American Dream and the more well-known song If Heaven Ain't a Lot Like Dixie were released on the same day in October of 1982. Both were top hits. I was 3 months old. And I'm pretty sure my dad was listening to those Bo Cephas records at the time. My earliest musical memories are of the Hank Jr. late 70s and early 80s. It wasn't just the subject matter. It was Hank's delivery and soulful singing voice with just the right amount of Southern twang. I've always been fascinated with Hank Jr.'s ability to relate to the common man through music, when in reality, Hank Jr. has never lived a normal life at all, or been a working man or a common man. Untangling My Mind. Early on in Clint Black's career, he was compared to Merle Haggard, at least vocally. You know, back in 1994, Clint collaborated with the Hag to co-write the song Untangling My Mind. I'll be honest, at the time, I didn't think much of the song or connect with the sad delivery, which climbed the country music charts all the way to number 4 back in 1994. It was 1996 before the song hit home with me. Merle Haggard recorded his version of the song and included it on his album 1996. Boy, did the Hag give the song a different feel and vibe. He sped it up and gave it a foot-stomping backbeat, much like his hit from years before, I Think I'll Just Stay Here and Drink. The lyrics of this song are a perfect example of just how superb Haggard and Black were as songwriters. They wrote, "Tell 'em I won't be riding, I'll be walking. I don't think no crazy man should drive. Anyway, the car belongs to you, babe. Remember, I love you just as long as I'm alive. But if anyone should wonder where I've gone, If anyone should ask from time to time, just tell them that you finally drove me crazy and I'm somewhere untangling my mind. Merle's 1996 album, it was actually named 1996, was and is one of my favorite Hag albums, even though it wasn't commercially successful. Burn One Down, Clint Black. 1992 was filled with great country music. Clint Black's song, Burn One Down, is flawless in my opinion. Another huge hit for Clint, topping at number 4. You know, it's one of Clint's most beautiful and heartfelt vocal performances. Saying goodbye to a lover is a common thing in country music. But some songs capture the emotional turmoil better than others. The bitterness is evident, but so is the pain of losing her. I guess you're off to have your fun. Another ending just begun. And I know what I don't see really shouldn't bother me. So go and have yourself a ball. You'll be at no one's beck and call. And with that fire in your eyes, another lover's moon will rise, and someone else will take the fall. Pure poetry, plain and simple. Knowing you're going to lose someone and feeling insecure or not good enough is absolutely heartbreaking. Burn One Down really deals with so many layers of losing a lover. Side note, this song was from Clint Black's 1992 album, The Hard Way. I absolutely love the fiddle at the beginning of this record. There were 3 fiddle players listed on the album. Was it Rob Ajakos, Jeff Huskins, or the great Mark O'Connor? Hell, I'd buy all 3 of the fiddle players a round of drinks for being a part of this masterpiece. The Quiet Time. Sometimes the most relaxing headspace is brought about by a quiet room. A cool drink of ice water, accompanied by my dog sleeping there on my lap, while I sit in my favorite chair. Only the roar of a passing plane overhead, or the song of a bluebird, breaks the silence. Disconnected from reality, my mind is able to imagine things that hide in my subconscious mind. And so I sit and wait for the moments of unexplained phenomenon to occur. Imagination. You know, I often wonder about the state of imagination. With all the images of any kind at the tip of our fingers, is the imagination going to become something we use less? My imagination got me through so many tough times from my childhood, and even all the way up to the present day. One's imagination can take you places you may never go in reality, or create places that don't even exist in reality. Next to love, the imagination may be my greatest life experience. I try to never take it for granted, for without it, life would be very bland. And my creative well would have run dry many, many years ago. I often draw my creative or imaginative thoughts from my memory, which, to quote the Italian novelist Italo Calvino, the memory is littered with bits and pieces of images, like a rubbish dump. Exit 231, my first band. 20 years ago, this month, myself and three of my best friends at the time took a trip up to Tuscumbia, Alabama, to record our first and only demo as a band. Myself, Jason Beavers, Wiley Jones, and DJ Lane, aka Daniel, made up the band we called Exit 231. For approximately 2 years, we had been practicing mainly at my grandparents' barn and playing at local gigs and parties before finally venturing into the recording studio. We had 1 8-hour session booked at the MSMM studio, and we were all so happy to finally be making our way into the recording studio for the first time. For me, that day was a dream come true. Ever since I was a small child, all I wanted to do was sing and make records. Although nervous and unsure of ourselves in that new environment, the demo turned out pretty good for a bunch of kids who were just, you know, high school kids making music, most of the time making it very loud. Within a year or so of the recording, though, the band had gone our separate ways. And that being said, I have nothing but fond memories of that time period of my life and my first experience in the recording studio. My time with Exit 231 was a very important time for me and a very important part of my musical history and my growth as a musician. And even more importantly, my growth as a person. I recently started reading some of the great poet Walt Whitman's work. Walt was born over 200 years ago and died way back in 1892. So far, his words have made me think of my relationship or lack thereof when it comes to spending time in nature. Whether it be waking up early and watching the sunrise while listening to the birds chirp, or the nighttime sounds on a clear night while frogs and crickets can be heard in the distance. Although I sometimes hike, bike, and even take long walks, I don't hunt, fish, or camp at all anymore like I did in my youth. There was a particular verse of Walt's poetry that made me long for a deeper connection to nature. The verse is from his poetry collection entitled Leaves of Grass. This is what he wrote. Alone, far in the wilds and mountains, I hunt, wandering amazed at my own lightness and glee. In the late afternoon, choosing a safe spot to pass the night, kindling a fire and broiling the fresh-killed game. Soundly falling asleep on the gathered leaves, my dog and my gun by my side. You know, Walt's writing style was long-form, free-verse poetry. So I personally enjoy reading his work in short doses, because it can be a little wordy at times. This particular verse is one that spoke to me and made me look inside myself. This is why I have developed such a deep affection and appreciation for many different kinds of literature. The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Working Man, Nowhere to Go. First of all, we can all probably agree that the 1987 classic song, Fishing in the Dark, is what the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band is most known for. But the talented group of country folk rock musicians are so much more. The band has around 30 songs that have charted on the country music charts. Billboard country, that is. In April of 1988, the band released a single that would climb all the way up to the number 4 spot and stay on the charts for 18 weeks. The song was entitled Working Man / Nowhere to Go. You know, I believe that good music can truly be timeless. And with all the current unrest and unemployment due to the coronavirus, this song touches so many nerves with Americans right now and what they're currently going through. I believe music can help us through struggles and strife. This song is currently in my rotation of music, and not only is it sonically soothing, but the lyrical content is so poignant.
When you get the shit kicked out of you for long enough, and long enough, and long enough, you have a tendency to say what you really mean. Charles Bukowski. You know, it began as a mistake, this podcast, that is. Or at least the name of it anyway. The Hillbilly Luchador was some sort of alternate online personality or character I created for myself over a decade ago now. But the fact is that this podcast is about my life and thoughts and opinions. Yes, I love hillbilly music and pro wrestling of yesteryear. But that's not what, you know, this podcast is all about. And it's certainly not the only thing I'm interested in. This podcast has certainly been about more than just those two subjects. So in an effort to keep my creative endeavors cohesive, I have decided, after a 5-year run under the Hillbilly Luchador moniker, to rename this podcast the Josh Porter 08 Podcast. Seeing how I have achieved the majority of my success under the umbrella of my YouTube channel name anyway, online that is. So that's what everything I do now, from here on, will be under. Maybe this will help the podcast to grow and be easier to find for those seeking it out. Thank you all for all the support over the last 5 years. I intend to continue podcasting and recording music for the foreseeable future.
And now live questions with JP. How are you?
Well, that depends on who you ask.
What are your thoughts on love?
Love. You know, love is something that is not easily defined. It's probably one of the more difficult emotions that you'll experience in life. I've been very fortunate to experience it a lot. I am a guarded person for the most part, but when I do love, I love with all my heart. And I learned that from my grandparents, from my mom, and most recently, over the last 8 years, my wife. The thing about romantic love is I truly believe that you have to trust the one you're loving. Because if not, you can't fully experience love. Being guarded and worried about getting hurt because you don't want to give someone your whole heart can diminish love, or the experience of love, rather. Even in the times that I've been hurt or burned by love in the past, I've always been glad to go into it, you know, with an open heart, for better or worse. And I feel like that that's the best way to experience love. Of course, you know, love of a friendship nature or family nature can be just as powerful as the romantic love you'll experience in this world, or fairly close, that is. But it is a very different experience. I don't know if that's tied to the sensual side of it or what, but friendly and family love is a very, very important trait to also be open-hearted about, because your friends and family can hurt you as well. And that has been a detriment too for me, closing myself off to people because I'm worried about they're going to hurt me. But as I've gotten older, I've been able to experience love in all areas better because I'm open-hearted and open-minded, I feel like.
What are your thoughts on lust?
I have definitely fell victim to lust many, 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 many times throughout my life. Whether it be a brand new shiny truck or brand new guitar or a pretty lady. Out of all the deadly sins, I would think that lust is probably the one that's the easiest to get you, because it can tie into other things. Greed and lust are very, very close when it comes to lusting for material things, because once you get some, you gotta get some more. I guess that goes too for beautiful humans as well. Lust, though, is something that you can't avoid. You just kind of have to contain it. And a young man or a young lady will have a harder time containing it, it seems like, from my life experience. As you get older, it seems a little bit easier to contain, at least for me. But I could see how not having a healthy sensual relationship with your partner, it would be easy to fall into the pitfalls of lust, even at an older age. Just beware, because it is one of the seven deadlies, you know. It's on the list for a reason, yeah.
What are your thoughts on hate?
There's plenty of hate in this world. Way too much, actually. Hate is very dominant on the social media scene. You know, and I'm sure you got different shades of hate. deep hate, light hate, you know, different, all kind of different hate out there. I don't partake in too much of it. Even if I dislike someone or something, I usually just tend to not comment on it. Even in everyday conversation. It's unhealthy to spread hate, and it does nothing for the soul, I feel like. It won't make you feel better to hate on somebody else. There, you know, ignorance is tied to hate a lot. Somebody being so headstrong or so convicted in their ways, you know, having a self-loathing, almost dump your garbage onto somebody else type attitude is something that a lot of haters do. Because they don't feel very good about themselves. And even though I do struggle at times with how I feel in everyday life, ups and downs are normal. And when I'm down, I will not shovel it upon somebody else. Yeah, so social media has intensified hate, if you will. It's making it stronger and stuff. But in everyday world, I don't experience much hate, whether it be in everyday interactions or whatnot. I don't think there's as much hate in the world as the media and other talking heads and keyboard warriors seem to be putting out there. So don't believe the hype, don't believe the hate, because a whole bunch of it's just malarkey.
How do you feel about routine activity?
Routine is actually one of the most fascinating things that I partake in. I have a everyday routine during the week, especially. And there are days when I absolutely hate it. And then there's days that I'm okay with it and actually enjoy it. I think for certain people, routine can be soul-sucking. And it's that way for me sometimes when I would rather be traveling or playing music or reading a book or just doing something I enjoy rather than participating in routine. But unfortunately, if you're going to keep the lights and the bills paid, you have to participate in routine as an adult, or at least I do, not having a trust fund or anything of that nature. So yeah, routine is very, very hard for me sometimes. And in those times, you just have to be strong and stay the course, you know. It's very, very important when you're stuck in a routine sometimes to just change it up just a little bit. Even the little things, you know, can make a huge, huge difference if you're that be whether you're eating the same things, watching the same TV shows, reading the same types of books or whatever. The most effective way to deal with routine sometimes is to not change the big parts of it. Maybe just change little things in your everyday routine. It seems to really, really help me out.
Do you find people who've gained popularity for their attractive looks, thoughts, and opinions valuable?
Beauty queens, former centerfolds and whatnot, that, and other types of models that get famous for creating an image that, you know, stimulates people, young men and women. I think that especially later in life, after their looks have gone away, I think it would be very, very interesting to hear the perspective that they have, whether they were able to see that, you know, they were idols to so many. Take, for example, a Farrah Fawcett or any beautiful lady like that. You know, all the models, Cindy Crawford and all those ladies. And I could probably read books or watch interviews on this, but I haven't been seeking it out. It's just something that popped into my mind. I think that we almost treat these celebrity models and actresses and whatnot as a some kind of weird, like, Greek goddess or something. Almost just images. But in reality, they're people, just like us. Just like some musicians and things, or actors and actresses that are, you know, held in high regard by the general public. These former beauty queens, some of them longer than others, have a run at the top. You know, they have their day in the sun, so to speak. But yeah, I do find it fascinating what their experience is and was during their quote-unquote day in the sun and where their life goes afterwards. I think that especially the ones who, like Christie Brinkley or someone like that, who are so deeply embedded into American culture, what their thoughts and life experience are and were would be pretty interesting to hear.
Do you find vulgarity entertaining or necessary in some forms of creative works?
Yes, I do find vulgarity and profanity entertaining. That being said, there's a time and place for it. And I feel like maybe there's less of it in my life than there used to be. When something goes wrong, it's easy to drop a bunch of, you know, four-letter words or whatnot. And it has made me feel better in the past. But I'm starting to realize, for me, as an artist, as a podcaster or a singer or whatever, or a writer, me personally, I like to keep it at a minimum. When you do use those words or those descriptions, I think it's powerful, or it should be. So overuse of it actually, you know, takes away the meaning of it. And people begin to tune you out when you are making a point and, you know, every other word is a curse word. It becomes monotonous and unimportant. And that is not what I'm seeking to do with anything I do, whether it be writing or speaking or anything. So I'm trying to get away from leaning on vulgarity. It seems to be something in the past that when I was doing something creative while drinking alcohol, especially, in a comedic way, it was definitely a crutch, you know, to just be cursing and be belligerent and It kind of makes you sound unintelligent. And due to my slow-talking southern accent, I don't need anything to make me sound any more unintelligent. Because, of course, the cliche is, if you're from the South and you speak the way I do, you're probably not the sharpest knife in the drawer. So being vulgar on top of that and profane is not the answer for me personally. Now, there are some great artists who have been able to use it and, like I said, use it effectively. Richard Pryor, very effective with using profanity. Eddie Murphy in the early stuff, very, very, very effective. Bukowski uses vulgarity in a beautiful way in his writing. George Carlin, I always found him very entertaining, and he never overdid it, I don't feel like, even with the 7 words you can't say on TV. But yes, profanity and vulgarity has its place in entertainment for me personally, and I enjoy it. And I don't think that'll ever change. The little boy in me will always snicker sometimes whenever somebody says one of those bad, bad words.
Would you like to be immortal?
Surprisingly, no. Mainly because I couldn't imagine the pain that would come with outliving and watching all your friends die off. Bukowski once said, you know, immortality is something humans created to deal with or not deal with dying or the thought of dying. And I think that's probably true, you know. Sometimes people ask you, you know, how long do you want to live? And I want to live as long as I can, as long as I'm healthy and everything's working like it's supposed to. But I have no desire to be immortal. And I don't think it's the answer to anything. We've all witnessed some people get wiser as they get older and some people stop learning. And I would imagine if we have, you know, immortal beings out there, it would be the same thing. Some would learn and some would not. Some would continue to make the same mistakes throughout infinity or however long, you know. However you want to describe the life of the immortal person. So no, I don't want to be here forever.
What are your earliest musical memories?
My earliest memory of listening to the radio was American Country Countdown with Bob Kingsley on Sunday mornings. Every other weekend, I'd go stay with my dad, and he worked side jobs a lot on the weekends, and I would be just sitting out in his truck entertaining myself and listening to the radio a lot of times. And Sunday mornings especially are memorable because of that countdown show and listening to see where my favorite artist, you know, their current songs were on the countdown, whether going up or down. And it was also a way for me to always be keeping up with the scene when it comes to country music especially. And back in the early 90s, I knew all the songs on the radio, all the different artists that made them, where they were from. And it was all because of those type shows, especially that countdown show. In between songs, Bob would talk for, you know, a minute or two, and he would really drop some knowledge about the people who were on the radio at that time. And, you know, I've kind of lost that now in adult life. I don't keep up with current music that much anymore, listen to any kind of countdown shows or anything like that. But it was a big, big impact on me. And a lot of times whenever I talk about, you know, music or artists, on this podcast, it's almost a little bit of a version of what Bob did, because he was a master at dropping knowledge, man. If you think about it, a lot of the artists on those top 40 countdowns or whatever, they're not there very long. So for him to be able to do the research from week to week and come up with, you know, even 2 minutes of material on Woody Lee, for example, is pretty impressive and something that I really enjoyed growing up.
Are you afraid of the current pandemic?
This portion of the program has been edited by the United Council for Censorship. Only state-sponsored media can comment on this subject.
This has been a Josh Porter 08 production. La 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 la
sure you're buckled in from the sound of what I've heard so far.
Your life is your life. Don't let it be clubbed into dank submission. Be on the watch. There are ways out. There is light somewhere. It may not be much light, but it beats the darkness. Be on the watch. The gods will offer you chances. Know them and take them. You can't beat death, but you can beat death in life. Sometimes, the more often you learn to do it, the more light there will be. Your life is your life. Know it while you have it. You are marvelous. The gods wait to delight in you. That's me.